C1PH. Number 1B.
But that manifestation comes in the next chapter, Christ as Christ, to us as a constant revelation. That manifestation is a manifestation of its own ideas, and these ideas come to us as a constant chain of revelation. Really, everything we do, everything which we are engaged in, should be really impelled by revelation, and not just by thinking, by knowing how to do things. We shouldn't get into routines, that everything we do is an inspiration, a revelation, direct to thought. So we have this infinite translation of the manifestation as revelation. And now, with the chapter on physiology, we come to that which John Dolly called the plane, the Christ as Christianity, namely to that plane where this revelation is to be practiced on every plane of thought. That in every situation, whatever the situation is, we can build our practice, our lives, on those preceding chapters. That there is no situation which is exempt from that manifestation and translation from God. So physiology is showing us that truth is revealed, doesn't need to be revealed again and again, that's shown in the preceding chapter. It needs only to be practiced. This is a statement from this chapter. And this leads me to considering with you a question which always somehow puzzles the students of Christian Science. Namely, what is practicing truth? What is applying truth? What is meant by that? See, we can have the same statement, like it only needs to be practiced, but the reader can take it in a very different way. Usually, the student of Christian Science has a sense of practice that one can take truth which has been revealed or which one knows, and applies it to something outside of truth, namely to an error, to an erroneous situation, to a disharmonious situation. This is the false sense one gets of the word practicing Christian Science. I don't know if I can make myself clear, but I just tried to word it and word it again. It's a sense that one has learned a principle and that now one takes that principle and applies it to a situation, to a case of sickness, to a disharmonious situation. And if one has that sense, then one builds right away on duality, namely on the belief that there is a truth and on the belief that there is an error and on the belief that there must be a bridge from the truth which leads that truth over to the erroneous condition. It's a complete duality in thought. And therefore, the student struggles very much with that sense of practice, with that sense of applying truth to something. You know how so often students will say, oh, this is wonderful what I hear and what I study about the system and about the principle and about the science, but how on earth do I practice it? How on earth can I apply it in everyday life? I remember in Oxford, 49, that John Dawley was lecturing to us on that wonderful subject on the relationship between absolute Christian science and Christian science by taking the four Gospels and showing how in each Gospel there was that interchange of absolute Christian science, namely of life, truth and love, precipitating itself in Matthew on mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love, bringing out in that way the whole genesis of Jesus' life story, and then going on to Mark and so on. And towards the end of that session, he came once to the session and he said, somebody has asked me how we could apply what he has been teaching. And he said, well, naturally, that's what I have been telling all the time. It stands out in my memory just as clear and as distinct as the Matterhorn stands out in Zermatt. You can't mistake it. See, that's the point. You see, that student who had asked that couldn't see what practice is. That student believed that Mr. Dawley was showing us the levels of science, the interchange and interrelationship which exists between the levels of science, and thought to it himself, well, that's wonderful, that's a wonderful theory, but how on earth am I going to apply it? And he said, well, that's what I was telling all the time. Namely, let's be quite clear. You see, this is a fundamental question. And I'm sorry for you for this weekend, because I'm going to repeat this about 1,000 times. And if I can make that clear through this chapter on physiology, I think we have achieved something big. Namely, to tear down that sense that there is a duality between understanding a principle and then applying it to something outside of that principle. You know, the other argument which you hear, which says, well, this is a nice theory, but how does it work in practice? Or that even they say, well, that's all right in theory, or he is well versed in the theory, but all what we need is practice. I remember my professor at the university way back 30 years or so, when an equal statement has been made, that he was jumped up furiously, and he said, there is nothing more practical than a good theory. And nothing is more impractical. You say unpractical or impractical? Impractical. And there is nothing more impractical as a practice without theory. So he pointed out that to a student at the university, just as we have to see that clear enough in science, that you can't say, well, he doesn't know the theory, but he practices it. Well, what it? What is that it? So, let's be clear, there is nothing more practical than a good theory, because a good theory is the most practical thing we have. That's why we learn science, because science is the most practical thing which we know. So let's take a few statements from Mrs. Eddy's work about this question of what is practical. And the first thing you will notice if you take the concordance and look up what she says about practicing, you will find that she isn't giving many references. It isn't a big question to her. She would say, for instance, Christian Science practice begins with Christ's keynote of harmony, be not afraid. As if she would say, don't make anything out of a problem. And taking away or taking right away that the problem is a problem. Making a problem to a problem. If there is only a divine principle and its idea going on, the most practical thing is to see that there is no problem. That's very practical, because that is implied in the statement that only God and his idea is going on. So the most practical thing about this theory is that there is no problem going on, and therefore that we don't have to be afraid of it. The statement which is perhaps most misleading, if one doesn't look at it properly, is the one which she had in the previous chapter, where she said, the principle of divine metaphysics is God. The practice of divine metaphysics is the utilization of the power of truth over error. See, this rendering, the utilization of the power of truth over error, naturally can imply to the student that you must use truth somehow, the power of truth, and use that power of truth against error. But you can also read it the way it is meant to be, namely that the power of truth is really the power over error. But it's the power of truth that is the power over error. It's not my utilization which gives to truth the power to be more powerful than error. What she indicates is, if we are face to face with a situation, with error, well, the practice of it is to go to truth. That's the utilization. To go to that truth which overcomes error. To go to that truth of which we know that truth itself will deal with error. And after what we have been doing all through the winter, now we know so well, you see, that truth is that which deals with error, and not our thinking, and not our using truth, as if truth would only work if we use it. She says, the Hebrew verb to believe means also to be firm or to be constant. To be firm or to be constant. This certainly applies to truth and love understood and practiced. See how she says that this applies to truth and love understood and practiced. Therefore, the practice here is shown to be constant in our understanding, to be firm in our theory. To be firm in what we know about the divine principle and its infinite system of ideas. So the practice is really to stand for truth, to stand for the principle, to stand to our theory. That's the practice. We find first always a searching for what the science of being is. It's perhaps more the manhood sense within us, and that is to be coupled with the womanhood sense of it, which says, all right, I stick to it. All right, I stay with it. It's not the question now, how can I apply that which I have learned to something outside of itself? That's duality. That never works. And that is why students who try to work out problems that way that they always feel that they are not making the grade, that it wears them down. It disillusions them. Whereas the practice is that we stand to that which we have learned, to accept that which we have learned, to be firm really in that which we have learned. See, I think this is really the, because we are in Christianity, is really the deeper meaning of what I have tried to bring out in my book on the Epistles in the Light of Christian Science, where I showed that all those epistles can be reduced into a matrix of Christianity, and showed that that matrix of Christianity, which is the practice of Christianity, is really based on first accepting the principle or the new faith in Jesus' time, accepting the principle. Then, second, that having accepted it, to claim it, to make it one's own. Then third, really, to abide with it, to steadfastly abide with it, not to deviate from it. And then fourth, really proving it by being it. So see, that's application. It's not transportation of truth to a situation. How does my understanding now have an effect over there, over on that problem? But the practice of it is really to stick to what one has seen. So, in another instance she says, in order to apprehend more, we must put into practice what we already know. So that's practice, that which we know to use. Therefore, to meditate, to ponder, to stick to what we have learned, to stick to our vision, so that the vision is not just vision, but that it becomes us, that it becomes our substance, our conviction. And that's the practice. What does she say about application? The old question which says, yes, that is all right, that is a theory, but how do we apply it? Well, you know how Mr. Dorley in his latest years brought that out more and more and more and more. That he says, that principle applies itself. That truth uses itself. That truth uses us. Not that we use truth, but that truth uses us. When we think about these terms of application and using and practicing, let's just have a very clear concept that we are too small for the infinite truth, that we could inform that infinite truth what to do, or to give to that infinite truth power to do something, and when to do it, and how to do it. The best practice is really to put ourselves right away out of the picture, to put the problem right away out of the picture, and let really that theory be practical, namely that principle operates by itself and operates by its own power, that mind manifests itself out of itself and through itself and as itself and for itself, and in that infinite rhythm of the one mind, we don't have to give any information. He says, the scientist's demonstration rests on one principle. It rests on one principle. Let this principle be applied. to the cure of disease. Let this principle be applied. She doesn't say, and go and apply this principle. She says, let it be applied. Let it be. See, again that sense which we had in the days of creation where God always says, let there be, let there be, let there be. And the practice really is to let it be and not to try to interfere with that which principle is doing anyway. That's what is demanded of us. So let it apply, let principle apply itself. And the more we let principle apply itself, the more we really practice that theory. She says, I have set forth Christian Science and its application to the treatment of disease just as I have discovered them. I have demonstrated through mind, capital M, see, I have demonstrated through mind, capital M, the effects of truth on the health, longevity, and morals of men. Can you see how the divine truth always practices itself through its own mind, capital M, through truth, mind, not through our minds, not through our volition, not through our informations, not through our advices which we give, but it is truth which works out itself on mortals through mind, capital M. So here we feel, you see, that that is the theory of true practice, that we see, let truth know what to do. Let truth be what it is, because truth knows what to do. Truth has the power of mind over matter, and therefore truth has the healing power. And it works through mind, capital M, not through our minds. Another point that comes in when one speaks about theory and practice, principle and practice, that the argument is, yes, what you are studying in Christian Science is very nice, it sounds wonderful, and so on, but it is abstract. And the criticism comes in that this is only abstraction. What does Mrs. Eddy say about abstract? He says, to mortal sense, Christian Science is abstract. Actually, there is an argument which says Christian Science is abstract, but she says to mortal sense. So let's be honest always with ourselves. That's always the best thing. The moment something within us comes up with the argument that the matrix or the four levels or the Christian Science textbook is abstract, but not practical, not concrete, then let's be quite clear that it is only to mortal sense, that therefore we haven't seen this thing through spiritual sense. Only to mortal sense, Christian Science is abstract, because mortal sense can never fathom spiritual reality, never. These are two different states of consciousness, two different structures of consciousness, which cannot commune with each other. She says, infinite progression is concrete being. I think what we have been doing through the levels was showing the infinite progression. And if one touches that with spiritual sense, one certainly gets a feeling of concrete being, which, she says, finite mortals see and comprehend only as abstract glory. Can you see again? It's mortal sense that talks about abstractions. that science is abstract and not concrete. It isn't the thing itself, science itself, that is abstract. It can't be abstract. Why can't it be abstract? Because we have seen in being, being is fourfold. It has the Word, it has the Christ, it has Christianity, it has science, which means that being is of the nature of self-manifestation. It manifests itself out of itself and through itself and as itself and to itself, and that is a tremendous dynamic. And God works by itself. Being works by itself. It has worked long before mortals were on this planet. Long before. So, being can never be abstract, because being has a dynamic. She says, love cannot be a mere abstraction, or goodness without activity and power. You can't have love as an abstraction. It's quite impossible, because the very nature of love is that love never loses sight of loveliness, that love is never without its object of manifestation. Love is that term in being which says, I express myself constantly as the maximum of good, as the perfection of being. It can never be abstract. So, but, she says, error is more abstract than truth. Error is very abstract. Error is the most abstract thing, I think, which we can see, because it doesn't exist. So it is something really abstract. It has really no concrete being. Yeah. So let me just round up what we have been seeing with this chapter. This chapter comes now and wants to show us that truth is revealed. All right, we could say all what we have been doing up to now was a great revelation of truth. It needs only to be practiced. But what does that mean? Does it now mean that we have that what has been revealed to us, to have that as an entity somewhere, which should be applied to something somewhere, called a disharmony? Or do we mean with practice something very different, namely to stay with this vision, to stick to this vision, to trust this vision, to confide in this vision, to accept this vision as real and the only? Then we practice what we have learned, because then we accept really what we have learned.